The prevailing wisdom over the last 3 to 4 years has been post every day, post often, be in front of people, be present. And that's how you stay top of mind in business or in attention. And so authority became this kind of more personal or parasocial relationship that you might have with a creator or an institution. I think where it's going to get kind of wild is with AI, everyone's going to be constantly present, and you're going to be constantly in front of people or being shown posts and people on a regular basis. And it's going to become even harder. So that kind of like the attention piece is going to become more of a commodity, and it's going to displace the burden of like personality that the winners have in the current economy, and sort of trying to figure out what's next. Like how does the cream rise if everyone can do it now?
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, a show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I'm your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is the Shane Green. He is the worker and owner, a worker owner, which sounds like owner operator, like he's driving a big rig. And also, I just said big rig instead of 18-wheeler, like I'm 4 years old. So we'll continue. Shane builds pathways for world-changing ideas to spread through trusted, high-integrity certification programs. And we need more of those, the high-integrity part.
Yes.
As founder of Certainly, he helps experts transform their work into ecosystems of trained practitioners who raise standards, share common language, and amplify impact far beyond one-to-one delivery. Welcome to the show, Shane.
Thank you. Thank you. Good morning, Kenny. Good to see you, man.
Morning. Depending on where you're at, that is true. If you're, I like talking to people in like Australia or Philippines or whatever, I feel like they're living in the future. So far, they're holding out. They will not tell me like the Powerball numbers, and that feels rude. But that's maybe a podcast for a different day.
I think
the future and Powerball numbers. What don't they want us to know? That's my clickbait title. All right. Well, Shane, tell me, other than Powerball numbers, what is on your mind?
Kitty, these days I've been thinking a lot about trust and authority and how rapidly that is changing. And just want to talk to you a little bit about kind of where we're at as a country or a society and how that's changed. And also some ways that people are trying to solve for that and help people find a way out of the kind of big trust gap that we're in. I think in general, we've sort of our like beacons of trust, media, colleges, institutions, governments, we're less trusting as a society when it comes to those things. And I think that is not great, but sort of an outcome of just misperformance, political divides, things like that. And so been thinking a lot about what rises or what comes about in that void or in that transition, and writing and thinking a lot about that these days.
I think I agree with you on it. It is very timely. I think maybe if we could dive a little deeper into why it is so timely, because you could argue people have had trust issues since the dawn of time. I mean, if I was Adam, I'd be like, Eve, why are you talking to a snake? Yeah. Like, hey, like, sweetheart, like, don't talk to the animals. But we've had trust issues going back as far as human history has been recorded. What makes right now special or different than maybe other well-documented times in history where there's distrust between people and governments, just people on the streets between each other?
So why right now? I think there, like specifically from like an American context, there was a degree of bipartisan acceptance of some of these larger institutions, maybe not government, but certainly from like a media or academic standpoint, as far as the bedrocks of our society. And there was a pretty common narrative when it comes to those things. And I think just over the last 30 years, maybe with some acceleration over the last 10, those ideas have started to really erode. And I think it is interesting because those things still continue to persist. Like, people continue to go to college, right. People continue to spend on degrees. Like, we still consume media, but with the advent of the internet and a much like lower cost of production and increasingly with AI, people have the ability to create other narratives or other voices or other opinions and distribute those in a much more rapid and cheap fashion. And so the options that we have are just so abundant now. And I think the question at hand is like, where's the truth in all of that?
Yeah. I am a fan of the like signal versus noise paradigm of, I think it used to be, hearing you talk, it sounds like it used to be a lot easier to get to the signal or at least identify what parts were noise. And And I think this is shifting as of this recording. We're in December of 2025. So this is going in the capsule. We'll dig it up in 100 years. But I think we used to have a bunch of voices. Like I say, the best thing about the internet is it gave people a voice. And certainly, the worst thing about the internet is it gave people a voice.
Yeah.
Because there's some people that just don't need a mic or a camera or access to the internet. Right. But it just became noisier. Like, I think the volume of the noise increased and that obscured the truth more, because there were major media outlets that would be slanted one way or another. People who had their own agendas, and it was easier to keep agendas hidden. And now everybody's an investigative journalist.
Yeah.
If you have a phone and a wireless mic. And so I think that there's a lot of good that's come with it, but I think you're right in that it's harder and harder. And I think the shift we're facing now, and why I mentioned the date, is I think it was volume of information. Cause I think, every 48 hours or something, I think we're creating as much content, data, or information as like the previous 2000 years of history, which is insane to think about.
Yeah.
I think the big shift now is with artificial intelligence. I think it's going to make things even harder. And I'm not just talking about like deep fake videos, although certainly those are going to make things troublesome.
Tough. Yeah.
But how can you start to, as these models are getting smarter and smarter, how do we start to tell the difference between what was a genuine human opinion that invited dialogue and debate and conversation, and what was just an AI, somebody behind an AI, or God forbid the AI starts thinking on its own, putting out a narrative? And because it can conjure together all these stats and all this stuff, and it seems very smart, people are left like, well, that sounds smarter than anything I can come up with. I guess that's the truth.
Totally. And I think it's back to the timeliness of this, as the prevailing wisdom over the last 3 to 4 years has been post every day, post often, be in front of people, be present. And that's how you stay top of mind in business or in attention. And so authority became this kind of more personal or parasocial relationship that you might have with a creator or an institution or someone that you see regularly. I think where it's going to get kind of wild is with AI and with the deepfake videos or just like these production tools that we now have at scale, that everyone's going to be constantly present, and you're going to be constantly in front of people or being shown posts and people on a regular basis, and it's going to become even harder. So that kind of like the attention piece is going to become more of a commodity, and it's going to kind of displace the burden of like personality that kind of the winners have in the current economy, and sort of trying to figure out what's next. Like how does the cream rise if everyone can do it now?
Yeah. Because I think it was who was first to adopt the low barrier to entry to get on, right? Mm-hmm. Like what you and I are doing right now, even going back like 15 years ago, probably would have cost me several thousand dollars to set up. But yeah, now I can get running for a $30 a month subscription and maybe $150 worth of recording equipment. It sounds like you're saying the breakthrough that is needed, and you're already seeing it, is people who have a distinct voice. And you could say personality. I mean, we have personalities in huge, like, global media, like people who are famous for being famous. But in the world in which you operate in and I operate in, which is professionals who are teaching, training, trying to help others better themselves, it sounds like people like me are going to have to double down on having a distinct point of view. Am I off base or misunderstanding you there?
I think that's the critical piece, was what is unique about you when the attention and the polish and the production become more commoditized and right, become the easy part of the equation. So really kind of figuring out what that unique part of you, that method, that framework, that point of view becomes the most interesting thing in the next version of the market.
Yeah, which part of it sounds great. Let's make high production value more accessible. Woo, yay. But something, I wrestle with this too, because I'm going through a shift in my business, which you and I have been talking about outside of this recording, is that sort of means the only thing left to distinguish, which is what it sounds like you're saying, is the person in front of the camera, behind the mic, whatever it is. That's an incredibly vulnerable place to be, because now it is just me that is distinguishing. And if this flops, then it can feel like I flopped. Mm-hmm. Or if people don't like it and they reject it, well, they're sort of rejecting me, not like, oh, well, the production quality was really low, they're just getting started, I'll weight it accordingly. But when your production value as a startup can look like a billion-dollar movie theater or a movie production company, well, then all you're left with is the content. What are you seeing, or how are you thinking about when it comes to somebody's really got to put their thoughts, their heart, themselves out there in a place that honestly seems like a really mean, messy, terrible place to be? And in some cases, there's some pretty severe punishments for having a strong point of view.
Yeah. And that's a real fear. And something I personally feel as I try to put myself out there every day as well, on camera, podcasts, posts. Mm-hmm. The one way that I'm getting around it and trying to encourage others to is, yes, you do need to be in front of the camera. You need to be mm-hmm. sharing yourself with your mm-hmm. audience. But the one kind of next step that I think is going to help a lot of people is, how do you take that uniqueness that you've built and put it into a separate container? Let's say it's a method, it's a framework, it's a piece of software mm-hmm. that becomes an extension of you, or a way to get your ideas out in a different package that's not just you. It's an addition to you.
Gotcha.
Does that make sense, Kenny? It's like,
yeah. Yeah. You're giving form mm-hmm. to that makes it easier and clearer to engage with the perspective of someone else.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Like I can, like, I love watching Alex Hormozi videos and his content and all that stuff. But when I go, I've chosen to buy his book because it's his perspective, which I've been listening to, and I've been gleaning bits and pieces and everything, but he took the time to organize it in such a way that would help me apply it. and actually get use and not just consume it. Like, and I agree, and hopefully one nugget stuck in my head and it comes to mind when I'm doing pricing and packaging on a new offering, but now I actually have the book. It's a big ass book that I can hold. Yeah, three big ass books. That sounds like a weird twist on the Three Little Pigs. But it's that package now to where I can engage, apply. If it resonates with me, well, now I can take action with it. Is that the gap now that you're seeing, especially with your work in founding Certainly?
Yeah, yeah. And so the whole idea is if it's a book or a series or a course or a credential, which is where I often play, is that you're giving your ideas shape, boundaries, rules, and it's yes, you enhance it as an individual and as a creator and a person, but it doesn't necessarily depend on your presence in every moment. It's not all in your head. Mm-hmm. It continues to live outside of you and even beyond you, if that's part of your legacy that you'd want to add, or even empowering others to take that work on themselves and use those ideas in the businesses that they own or run.
Yeah. So this, I think it's a good transition point into, and this is, I never want any of my episodes to be an advertisement, but I'm personally fascinated by the notion of certifications. I'm a junkie for them. And it's like, oh, I got a new certification, new badge. It's like a gold star. Like, tell my wife, like, can this one go on the refrigerator for a little bit? But in making certifications more accessible to people who are thought leaders, book writers, methodology creators, how are you helping to balance the sort of the downside or cap the downside that we discussed, where more and more people got voices, and so there was some good there, but it also created a lot of noise? How are you helping creators make sure that they're not just contributing to the noise, and that they're providing something that is of true value, that distinguishes them, their point of view, but it can also be really respected in the marketplace?
Yeah, I think when it comes to the certification piece, it's certainly not for everyone. I think there is a degree of readiness, both from the content itself that you're delivering, the market that you're appealing to, the infrastructure that's required, there is a right fit. So it's something we often recommend people not end up doing if they don't fit certain parameters. And also, like, coming as someone that came from the certification world, I don't like the idea of this NASCARification of people, where you're getting every single one, and it just kind of stacks up into just confusion for a particular market. And so that's always a fear in, like, over-indexing on the certification piece. So
yeah,
the things before we recommend any type of thing is, like, you certainly need to have an audience that is wanting and that you have people ready to pay for this, and both not just you, the individual, but also the companies that would leverage the material or the consulting. That's a huge piece of it. The market's got to be ready. And then the other piece too is, do you have clear outcomes that can make a business difference for a group to participate in your program? You have to have those stories. You have to be able to document that. That's sort of you have to show transformation. And that's ultimately, like, where if you have that, credentials make sense. Otherwise, a book or a course or some other type of more kind of distributed, kind of lower entry points for IP make more sense.
I gotcha. So a couple of things bubbled up with what you were saying. But I want to start with, I guess there's two things. One, how would you distinguish between someone who's taking a certification program and someone who's going through a course to become educated? Like, what are the differences there? And then how have you defined trusted or high integrity as it pertains to certification programs? So it isn't like Oprah, like, you get a cert, you get a cert, you get a cert.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So what's the difference there? And then how do you define high integrity?
Yeah. So when it comes to, so courses and certifications are often conflated. Mm-hmm. One challenge that we run into is that a lot of people take a course and get a certificate, and are certificates equal to credentials or certifications? And our point of view is no. When it comes, a course is designed to, is often limited in scope. It's either like a self-led or it's in person for X amount of time, and you receive education, maybe you do some practicum, but it ends when the course is over. That relationship mm-hmm. ends, unless you have like subsequent modules or higher level courses. A certification is designed to be for a much longer period of time. You take a course often with a credential, then you receive the brand marks and the training and access to community. There's going to be renewals every year, every 2 years. There's going to be continuing mm-hmm. education requirements. And so it's designed to have this longer term relationship between you and the user in order to kind of build and compound business value together. And so a course is really designed to deliver education. A credential or a certification is designed to essentially, like, basically build identity and belonging associated with that brand, depending on the strength of it. And so you need to really think about timeline is probably the underlying timeline dynamic to evaluate the difference.
Right. And I like the one part you had in the bio read was about the ecosystems for trained practitioners, which is different than like somebody who says, hey, I'd like to learn a little bit more about leadership versus so I can be a better leader versus I want to help make people better leaders. So I need the tools, not just the informations, but mm-hmm. also how do I apply, going back to what you're saying about there has to be some form of proven transformation.
Yes. Yeah, because essentially in a certification model, you both are staking each other's relationship, or like your public, your integrity is mm-hmm. you're staking it on one another. The business is loaning you their mark and their credential and their recognition, and you are representing that brand at the end of the day. And both of those things need to be symbiotic and support one another and advance one another. So you're really building a relationship.
Gotcha. Where the other can be more of a transaction.
Yeah, precisely.
Gotcha. So the high integrity bit, what have you come to define? Because going back to earlier in our conversation about signal versus noise, this strikes me as a piece that really helps make your clients' certification programs that they're developing with you or credentials be signal out amongst the noise of anybody who could just say like, well, I got a Mighty Networks or a Kajabi and it's going to auto-generate a PDF and you got a certificate.
Yeah. And that's a huge piece of the puzzle. And it's something that continues with clients, it matures over time. There's typically three levels of certification verification in the market. Mm-hmm. First party would be where the business itself or the organization itself writes the test, grades the test, and manage that relationship. And so you're kind of checking your own homework. It's a mm-hmm. great place to start, and that's where we start most of our clients on, because it's just it's the fastest to market mm-hmm. often, and it's how you make sure that this is a good fit for your business and your audience base. But it's probably the lowest trust because you're checking your own homework.
Right.
The second is second party certification, which is where you have like an associated group or a company that is, or a kind of a market based organization or association that's doing the checking for you, and you build it together. And so there's sort of this other layer, institutional layer, that you add to the mix. This would be, and this is common in like really kind of heavy industry and like pretty mature markets. Mm-hmm. But the gold standard is third party, which is where you have a completely outside standards oriented business or organization that is sort of checking and doing all of the verification on their end of it. And so you bring this
they're
outside
in the
party
business
in,
the of business certifying
of certifying people.
Okay.
And that's,
and then you build to their standards.
Their
like
standards,
whether or not it's gets the seal of approval, you have to sort of like submit it to him, to them. You're not just like making your own thing. You're not just co-creating a thing.
Yes.
You're like, hey, they've established these. This is what's the level, the base level, and let's see if we can make something that contributes at that level.
Yes. Yep. And that's ultimately the signal to the market that we are following these best practices, and it's getting to the place where it is the gold standard in mm-hmm. a particular discipline.
Because then it's not just quality of the content; it's also the accuracy or the consistency or quality of delivery of the content. Which,
absolutely, yeah.
And then it's the will this actually work when utilized? That feels like your 1, 2, 3 of like, hey, is this factually correct? Yep, sure. We wrote it. It's our methodology.
Right.
Cool. You co-create it with somebody else. You're like, okay, yeah, this is accurate. And somebody else said so. We didn't just say, hey, trust me on this. And then it's not only is the information accurate, but you can take this, go apply it to your situation or what have you. And you will see the changes that are promised through the process.
Precisely.
Going back to that proven transformation track.
Exactly. Yep.
Wow. And I remember when you first broke that down for me, like that was just really eye-opening because I hadn't thought about it that way. It's made me start to scrutinize some of my own certifications. I wanted to go like, you're charging an awful lot for first-party verification here.
I was like...
Maybe you should drop this down. So, mm-hmm. So how can people one find out on say like the buyer, the practitioner side, how can they find out at what level? There's nothing. I didn't hear you say there's inherently anything wrong with any of the three levels.
No.
It's usually, I guess, about fit, like severity, or what are the, or like, what's the risk, right?
Exactly.
Like, we want third-party verification on people who are becoming board-certified surgeons.
Yes, yeah.
Right? Like
or building buildings. Like
right. When yeah. if the risk is higher, like, it needs to be more independently verified. But how can people find that out and judge whether or not it's appropriate for their goals? Because I could hear a lot of people go, oh, well, if it's first party, well, then it's BS and it's not worth anything. And I don't hear you saying or insinuating that at all.
No. It's the first party certifications are very common. I think those come down to probably testimonials, case studies, like really documented transformations and changes. It's probably a little more anecdotal when it comes mm-hmm. to how they're presented.
Okay.
And they likely won't. There is also a lack of standardization across the industry itself and where a lot of like the misconceptions come in. And that's certainly something that I personally am trying to communicate and help people untangle. And that's like part of my mission is to educate people on how all of this works. When it comes to like you as a consumer or an individual, yeah, I would be much more scrutinizing about these things that you're likely investing in or that are just commonplace in your market that everyone seems to have. I think that there are some people that are just sitting and chilling and not like it's the standard itself is not evolving and not changing. I think we all need to demand more of these programs
mm-hmm.
and that should be part of your buying journey and not just accepting that as status quo. Because as we've talked about, things are rapidly changing.
Right. Let's flip the scenario over to the experts you're working with. So that makes me think if things are rapidly changing, and some things can feel a bit timeless, but there's always new research, new discoveries. It would feel like if there is an ongoing evolution in the accuracy, validity, reliability of your given area of expertise, then that's it sounds like that would be a match for credentialing, certification, not just a course or even like a free YouTube series. And that's where the ongoing relationship makes more sense, because people have bought in and say, no, I really want to be I also want to become an expert in this. So I need to get this foundational layer and then renew every year or 2 years or what have you, so that I can stay up to date, right?
Exactly. Yep.
So what helps an expert know if they're stumbling onto something that maybe should be a credential, and when should they know it's not? And it's just like, hey, you've got a great idea. I think this is a great ebook or a video series, but I don't know that it's at the credential level, or it's a fit for it. I don't want to say level, but a fit for this expression. How do we judge that?
When we talk to potential clients or folks that are interested in some of our offers, we do take them through a 10-question readiness assessment. So on a scale of 1 to 10, is there competition? Is there other credentials in your market? That's usually a good sign that there's space there. Do you feel like your audience is big enough where if you could capture a percentage of those to take your programming? That's usually how we maybe start to model their revenue numbers. I think an easy signal is, are people asking to deliver your training, or trainer to trainer, or train the trainer style model, if you have one of those, or people asking for that? Those are usually signals that a credential could make sense for you. I think like some of the more disqualifying things, it really comes down to, I think in the early days, audience. Do you have enough people that continually show up and want to buy your courses, more of your courses, that you have an engaged following that would respond to an offer that you put out there? One of the kind of practices that we had worked with people in the very early stage is build a wait list, build a lean little website, landing page. Say you're going to offer this, or you're exploring it, and see kind of what signups you can get. And that's a good way to start to see what the appetite could be if you did end up building one.
Yeah, I think it's Daniel Priestley, who's written several books, I think like Oversubscribed, Key Person of Influence. He has a tool that I use for my own diagnostic, which is Score App. So you can build quizzes and tools, but he has a waitlist function, and it comes from one of his techniques that he uses, because he is involved in so many different businesses and he's got great people and they'll bring him ideas.
Yeah.
And he says one of the ways that we figure out how to bet on things that seem more like winners is we'll set up a wait list.
Totally.
And he has some parameters. You can go look them up. I think he usually sets like a minimum threshold. Like if in a certain period of time, 150 people would put name and email or just email address on a wait list, and he says it's worth investing more time, energy, money. Because these things aren't cheap, nor do I think that they should be cheap to develop.
No.
Because I think some things, while I'm all for saving a buck, I think some things should have more of a cost associated with them, not to gatekeep, just because they're weightier. They need to have more meaning, and not a, hey, I threw some prompts into Claude Code and it built a certification for me because I had indigestion one weekend from pizza.
No.
Quality. That felt deeply personal coming from me. And it sounded like that's essence. Like I had just gone through that.
quality is king, I think, when it comes to certification. Part of my mission is not to cheapen the process. It's gotta be great. It's gotta be run well. It's gotta deliver outcomes. That's the only way to make the model work. Otherwise, just build a course. Or write a book. Like those are a lot lower of lift long term. The certification program does take some investment and takes a pretty involved founder or founding group to make it a success.
What's a typical, let's just go with like time investment. I mean, none of these things, whether you're writing a book or designing a worthwhile course, happen overnight. What what's asked of a founder, a leader who wants to build their own? Like, let's say they met all of the criteria on that intake. What are they in for?
I think it does come down to their current level of sophistication when it comes to, like, do they have a course that's teachable and has an assessment? If that's the case, that's usually a pretty nice translation. There's a lot we can can pull from that and repackage and build assessments around. The other big kind of success metric, or like the critical piece, is how public and how strong is your method? Is that something you talk about regularly right now, or is that something we're going to have to extract, make clear, digestible, and teachable? So that often is a decent project when we work with founders on getting that completely out of them. And that does take some intense kind of personal work. Like, that is a very inner thing that you're trying to pull out of someone. So a decent chunk of time is required for that. And then there's just the boring infrastructure piece. We get clients that have clunky websites that are not going to be good for conversion that we're going to have to rebuild. I'm working with a client right now that has no CRM. And so I'm having to stand up a CRM so they can manage leads, which is like kind of crazy to me. And then depending on how far they want to go, there could be an ad campaign. There's going to be media. They need some brand work. And so there is a litany of things that we just find in those early phases that we're going to have to address to make this work for them. And so it's like, as much as I want to like quote like hours or commitment, it really does come down to where they're at the moment.
Yeah. But what they're coming really to the easy. Table with already.
Yeah. They're coming to the table with a lot of it figured out. And there's like ways that we've worked with people where we build it all for them. Like, all those pieces, we just have our team run with. And that's a very fun thing for us to do. And we check with the founder from time to time, and it kind of takes care of itself. But a lot of our clients can't afford that type of that package. And so it ends up being piecemeal based on the size of their team and their sophistication.
Sort of a done with you model.
Exactly. Done with you versus done for you.
Which I can see benefits to both. I mean, there's a part of me that likes done for you. Like, I have no desire to, like, well, I say desire. I'm not the most handy person around my house, but I believe that there are very talented people who have spent time and are energized by it. I am happy to pay them money to come fix my plumbing or something.
That's
else, plumber. Right?
Yeah. Vince, he loves it.
Yeah. Hey, he's good at it. He loves it. Let's pay him. It puts food on the table.
Yeah.
But there are things to where I think you can, especially early on, I think that there can be some good benefit in being involved in the process more, so that you kind of learn like how all the pieces are put together. Because even just sitting here thinking about the certification you and I have discussed, I've already started to imagine, it's like, well, I have these different use cases. Would it just branch? Would there be a different version? Would there be this? Like, the outcomes, the audience, the people like start to change, and then that changes the communication. So it seems like something that could just keep extending, but there's probably some really good principles that once you get going and learn them, start to improve other areas as well. Because a lot of it is about effective and clear communication that other people can take and utilize, which that's just an awesome skill for any leader, founder, CEO, executive director to have, period.
Yeah. And I'd say that's probably the most satisfying thing for me in working with founders on this, is that they're not just like adding a new thing to do. It ends up changing their business, hopefully typically in a positive way, where they are more organized. They are more clearer in the directions. Their infrastructure is tuned up and kind of world-class. And so there's these business changes that do occur through this particular venue that do have some like really cool compounding impacts that we are able to deliver in conjunction with this. And I think the interesting thing is that, and just for like a bit of history on me, like, a year ago, we were a marketing agency that worked for certification groups. in the last 12 months, we've flipped it entirely, where we are a certification consultancy that just does marketing related tasks on the back end. Yeah. And AI has helped a lot with that, to just do it at the speed and scale that's required. But we just weren't getting a lot of customers with that early positioning. Marketing can become a dime a dozen, especially with AI, honestly, these days. And so we had to get really good at sort of selling the specific expertise. Mm-hmm. We're still doing the same work on the back end, truly. Mm-hmm. But this kind of new packaging and this new framing has really helped us have a lot more interesting conversations with people, which has been fun.
That's awesome. So if there's a leader listening, and maybe there's actually two answers here. One, for those who are trying to come up and learn, and those that have started thinking about what's my unique position, offering, way of doing things that I would like to share with the world. What's a baby step that both of those individuals could take to start making progress towards that trusted high integrity certification, either creating one or obtaining one?
Yeah, I think for the kind of business owner or entrepreneur or group that's out there, you have a method. You do work in a structured way. I'm sure of it. It wouldn't be too hard to really sit down and think about what those steps are, maybe name those steps, and start to work on the method or the framework that you use to deliver your customer service or deliver your courses or do services or things for people. And that starts to become that thing that's separate from you or separate from your business, and it allows you to have that standard that's clear to you and part of your business, that content rolls up into, that your services roll up into, that your comms roll up into. And so I think thinking about how you separate that out and just start to formalize the way you do business, and that becomes that method that could eventually be taught, could be tested against, and eventually becomes like a trusted part of your network or your audience's economy or even your market in the years to come.
Yeah. You could also be really good for internal training too, as you onboard more people. It's like, hey, you want to know how we do things? Like, go through this. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge. I'm confident this will not be our last conversation. And because I do think more and more people are going to lean into that authority, the things that they can trust beyond just like, I saw in a YouTube video how to do this thing. I don't know why people talk like that. It's ridiculous. But I think that's really going to do a lot for the marketplace to create trust, because as you mentioned at the top of the call, trust is eroding probably faster. The divide is bigger, and trust is always going to be important. But I think you can't luck into trust at this point. You got to be real, far more intentional and strategic about it. And I think that's what you're bringing. If people want to know more about you, more about Certainly and your work, how do they connect with you, find out more?
Yeah, I spend a lot of time on LinkedIn at Shane Green. Should be a pretty easy search on there. Try to post daily about certification topics. We have a lot of free material that we're constantly sharing to help educate the market. So check us out there. And our website is certainly.coop, C-O-O-P. We are structured as a cooperative, which is another interesting piece of our story. Cooperative means that the business is owned collectively. So we all have the same share of the business. And then we make our decisions democratically, one person, one vote. And so it creates a really interesting model for how business is done and how we help people day to day.
All right. I now know what episode 2 with you is going to be about. Because I'm like,
I could talk a lot for the cooperative piece. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Who gets to fire who in the event that it has to happen?
There's a chain of decisions that require.
Oh, yeah. I saw the website and I was like, .coop. And I was like, like a chicken coop? But it's like, we're all equal chickens in the coop.
We all share the same coop.
Yeah, same. We're all
produce
making
the eggs.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, nobody has more hay than the other for their nest.
That's the hope.
That took a weird turn. And that's, people are going to say, I don't know what they talked about, but there was some chicken talk at the end. And
at least
that's
they stayed
what
to
I
the
remember.
End.
At least they you know? Did. Yeah. So speaking of which, if he stayed to the end, I would love it if you would rate, review, subscribe, whatever the action button is on your platform of choice. That would be really helpful to me. I love the feedback. Leave comments. What do you want to hear more or less of? Maybe you want to hear more chicken talk, and I just don't know. I need that feedback.
I've got a chicken lady if you need it.
Ooh, okay. Yeah. I'm sensing.
We're gonna
do a panel. And you're not going to know who's who. One of them's a chicken. No, this is, I definitely need to eat. I'm getting really abstract in my ideas. So, but knowing what you want as a listener is why I do this. I enjoy these conversations. I get to talk to cool people like Shane. I would do this even if it wasn't being like recorded and released, but I want to bring value to you. So your feedback is invaluable to me, which always sounds like it's not valuable the way that word comes across, but I know that's not the definition. At least that's what people keep telling me. But until next time, change the way you think, you'll change the way you lead. We'll see you.